From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Now, the other day, I think Secretary Clinton appears to be getting a little bit nervous.
That was Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders Wednesday at another massive campaign rally, this one in Philadelphia, drawing better than 18,000 people in advance of Pennsylvania's April 26th primary. Sanders took aim at former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton over her support of a trade deal that helped enshrine Panama as a major offshore banking and tax haven. He spoke in the aftermath of the unfolding scandal brought to light by the release of the so-called Panama Papers, which disclosed the names of a number of major officials as holders of secret accounts and shell corporations.
We have won 7 out of 8 of the recent primaries and caucuses. And she has been saying lately that she thinks that I am, quote unquote, not qualified to be president. Well, let me just say in response to Secretary Clinton, I don't believe that she is qualified. If she is, through her super PAC, taking tens of millions of dollars in special interest funds. I don't think you are qualified if you have supported virtually every disastrous trade agreement which has cost us millions of decent paying jobs. I don't think you are qualified if you supported the Panama Free Trade Agreement. Something I very strongly oppose, and which, as all of you know, has allowed corporations and wealthy people all over the world to avoid paying their taxes to their countries. This campaign is gaining momentum because we are listening to the American people, not wealthy campaign contributors.
Meanwhile, Republican frontrunner Donald Trump was on Long Island speaking at a massive rally in Bethpage. Trump laid out some of his campaign's talking points.
Our country owes now $19 trillion. We owe trillions to China. We owe trillions to Japan. The whole thing is absolutely ridiculous. It's going to change around. It's going to change quickly. We are going to renegotiate our trade deals. In China, the case of China, $500 billion trade deficit every single year. It's going to end. Mexico, we have now $58 billion trade deficit with Mexico. And our businesses, sadly, are leaving our country, going to other countries. They're leaving our jobs in Long Island. You know it better than almost anybody. Our companies are being uprooted, taken out. They're moving to Mexico. They're moving to other countries. Everybody is looking for jobs. And you know what? We're going to end the practice. We're going to keep our companies here. And we're bringing companies back to the United States. You heard about Nabisco. Nabisco's leaving Chicago. They're moving to Mexico. You heard about many, many, many companies. They're moving. Recently, Carrier Air Conditioner, we won't buy Carriers anymore, folks. They announced that they're leaving the United States. They fired 1,400 people, a lot of people. They've been there for a long time. They're moving to Mexico. So here's what we do. Should I tell you what we do? Are you ready? If I'm president, we call up Carrier. We say, listen, I hope you enjoy your new plant. I'm sure it's going to be beautiful, wonderful place, a little bit hot, but that's okay. But just so you understand, you let go of 1,400 and even 1,750 from what I hear, great, great people, and they're right now unemployed in the United States as you make your air conditioners. So here's what's going to happen, folks, because the politicians cannot figure it out. They'll never figure it out. And beside that, they're paid off with campaign contributions. So even if they do figure it out, they're not going to do anything about it. Okay? So we say, and I say, I hope you enjoy your beautiful new plant in Mexico, but every single time you make an air conditioning unit and you send it across our now very, very powerful and strong border, you're going to pay a 35% tax on that unit. Okay? 35%.
On the so-called Panama Papers leak, the international whistleblowing organization WikiLeaks Wednesday tweeted that the leak of 11.5 million pages of secret financial records was a product of the U.S. government's Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, or OCCRP, which it said targets Russia and previously targeted the USSR. WikiLeaks said that what it called the Putin attack was funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, and American hedge fund billionaire George Soros, calling the U.S. government funding of the attack a serious blow to its integrity. For more on that, we spoke with Margaret Kimberly, who authors the column Freedom Rider at blackagendareport.com. This week she wrote about the so-called Panama Papers. Margaret Kimberly, welcome back.
Thank you, Don.
So you're parsing the so-called Panama Papers this week in your Freedom Rider column at blackagendareport.com. Let's chat.
Well, over the weekend, there was a revelation of a huge leak of over 11 million documents from a Panamanian law firm called Mossack Fonseca. And Panama is one of the world's major tax haven countries. It's like Switzerland for the Americas. And there were many prominent people named. The story first caught my attention because there were continued references to Vladimir Putin, who actually is not mentioned in any of the documents.
His picture was on a lot of stories,
his
though, like at the Guardian.
Tell the story. And but there are several Russians who are close to Putin who were mentioned, but the media never pass up a chance to try to discredit him. But while Putin was not mentioned, the late father of the Prime Minister of the UK, David Cameron's late father, was.
Right.
The Camerons were a rich family, and you put Britain has a higher tax rate, so you take your money offshore and you don't pay any taxes.
Right.
Petro Poroshenko, president of Ukraine, who became president after a U.S.-sponsored coup meant to confront Russia, is a very wealthy man. He's worth nearly $1 billion. He has offshore accounts. The Prime Minister of Iceland, who may or may not have resigned. First he said he had resigned, now he says he's not sure. I'm not sure at this hour whether he's still Prime Minister of Iceland or not.
Right.
People there reacted. This tiny country and hundreds of thousands of people protested. It looked like the entire nation. But so those are the people who were named in these papers.
Yeah. Also not named noticeably were any Americans, which is very interesting given the history of the status of Panama as a tax haven. And the banks that are there, American banks, in fact, the entire financial structure was restructured by the U.S. when they when they invaded and occupied and took out Noriega.
Yes, well, they don't... It's interesting. Americans don't need to take their money offshore in order
That's
to
right.
hide it. There are several states where it is legal to set up a shell corporation. In Nevada and South Dakota and Delaware and Wyoming, the U.S. is now the major tax haven of the world. So there's no need for Americans to go to Panama or Switzerland or Luxembourg or the Cayman Islands or British Virgin Islands, any of these places. they can do that right here. First of all, the tax rates for rich people are going down and down and down. Major tax cuts started under Bush, kept under Obama. So there is less risk to personal wealth here in the U.S., and plus you have these states where you can set up a shell corporation, although there's now an announcement there will be new Treasury rules which will make it harder, but yeah. I still think that the U.S. will be a great place for rich people to hide their money.
Well, not for nothing. Treasury just noticed because of the WikiLeaks? Come on.
Yeah, I know. Yes, this has been going on for quite some time. But we'll see. I doubt that the United States is going to keep rich people from risking their money.
Well, for Cameron, for example, I mean, clearly what his father was doing was sheltering Cameron's inheritance from estate taxes in Britain,
yes,
which are substantial. And you could say here in the United States, it's also way preferable to Britain. In New York State, for example, they did away with the estate tax. And
they surely did. Our Democratic governor.
That's right.
Yeah, this has been going on for decades. The Republicans have started with them, but of course, as usual, the Democrats do the same dirty work in trying to get people to believe there was a tax on everybody's estate. But it was only rich people, so they started calling it. They focus group polled, and they told all Republicans, call it the death tax, don't call it the estate tax.
Right.
So to give the impression that everybody, as soon as you die, the government's going to take your money.
Right.
But our Governor Cuomo, our putative and name only Democratic governor, got rid of the estate tax. New York was rich people were quite happy to live in New York State, and it was nonsense for him and others to say that rich people will all flee from the state unless we get rid of the estate tax, although that, frankly, would not be such a bad thing, because nothing trickles down. But at any rate, yes, this is something that has been going on for a long time, attempts to do away with the estate tax altogether, to cut taxes for rich people. So it is, it is an important story to know how rich people all over the world go to great lengths to hide their money, mostly from taxation, and also just from scrutiny. The Prime Minister of Iceland did this transfer with his wife to avoid disclosing how much money he had. So, and there are all of the people named in these papers. There are, people in China, in the Gulf states, United Arab Emirates, the King of Saudi Arabia. That's hardly surprising.
Right, everybody knows anyway. Yeah, right.
So that's the most important thing. And rather than just, point fingers and say how horrible rich people are, this should spark a deeper discussion about the political and economic systems that we ought to have in the world. We've all seen these terrible statistics now about the richest 1% having fully half the wealth in the world, actually more wealth than the rest of humanity. So this should spark a discussion about that. But the media, of course, as we've discussed, first they find a way to bring Putin's name into it. Then it's Assad, the president of Syria. Assad's cousin has, money in one of these accounts.
Right.
And so that proves that the United States should have destroyed Syria. But, it's funny how the press has to, Putin is the demon behind everything, instead of saying that the Russians are making good on their promise to kick ISIS out of Syria.
Yeah, that's right.
He's only in the news for allegedly dating Rupert Murdoch's ex-wife, which it appears to me was just made up completely. And even if he was, it would be his business, but because there are other Russians with money and offshore accounts, try to tie him to it instead of putting him in the paper for something far more important. But that is how our media work, unfortunately. So even a story which, like this, which has some value, is tainted by the bias of the corporate media doing the work of the political system.
And the policy discussion that they're avoiding, there are two legs in Panama. The first has to do with the bank accounts that are used to shelter money, to hide money, because they have the privacy regulations or protections. And the other has to do with the accumulation of wealth through the shell corporations, where you set up an entity, say you're IBM, I'm not saying IBM does this, I don't know, but for example, you have IBM, you set up a shell corporation in Panama, and a particular product that might be a little iffy is pushed through that entity. You invest your money into it, you make the thing happen, but if the computer or whatever product blows up in people's faces and they bring a class action lawsuit, only the assets of that shell corporation are in play. They can't sue IBM for it. So what's happened is they've been able to take very risky propositions and remove the risk from them. The ones that pay off, they accumulate great wealth. Then they're able to shelter it in the banks. Here in the United States, you have a similar dynamic. They do away with the estate taxes, and they release the regulations on Wall Street for speculation and let them mitigate with government guarantees any risk. So you accumulate great fortunes, and then you're able to pass them on from generation to generation.
That's right. Most people on the list of the wealthiest people in the world have earned their money the old-fashioned way. They inherited it.
Right.
So, so the rich are, that old saw is true, the rich are getting richer. There's so many mechanisms for them to keep passing on their money or to hide their money or not to risk any of their capital, to risk somebody else's, or actually the oldest trick in the book, to take it from the government. So this should spark a larger discussion about socialism, real socialism, not about Democrat like Bernie Sanders who liberals want to fall in love with, but real socialism and what that would mean, and real revolution, what that would mean, instead of this nonsense that we get every 4 years around an individual that liberals who don't really want to do any hard thinking or hard work of change want to rally around. So this should be a perfect opportunity to talk about those things and not to fall into the usual nonsense that is peddled as politics in the United States.
Now, I spoke with Dr. Richard Wolff the other day about the general economic situation, the global and the national economic situation. And, he was pointing out that which you've written about also and spoken about, that you need a fundamental change, some kind of a reset in this economy, and there's a political inability to accomplish it. The very people whose necks are going to end up in a noose when this thing comes down are preventing anything, even a traditional liberal Keynesian repair to the economy situation, and the political system isn't responding at all. And you're seeing sort of the masses that are supporting the Trump and Sanders sort of against the political structure to an extent. That's sort of a fuzzy expression of that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get from here to there?
Well, I think those of us who do want to talk about revolution need to start saying so. I have been critiquing those who either claim Bernie Sanders is bringing about some kind of revolution, or there are people who are, sticking a toe in the water, and they still wrap it around Sanders. They say, if Sanders doesn't get the nomination, we should build a third party. And I keep pointing out we have third and fourth and fifth parties now. There's a Green Party. There are numerous other parties that people in most of the states can vote for, aside from Democrats and Republicans. So why are you waiting for, and people say we need a third party, as if someone's going to bestow it on you. If you want to do the work of revolution, start a party yourself or take a look at the ones that already exist. Why is it, the person I like doesn't get the nomination, then we need to talk about change. We need to talk about change now. So I have said, New York primary is in a little less than 2 weeks. I'm still registered as a Democrat, but I won't be voting. because I'm not supporting the Democrats anymore. And I won't be voting for the Democratic nominee in November. So this is what I have been saying to people. It's like, this is not a revolution. I think we have to start just by saying it. There's no revolution in voting for a Democrat. If you want another party, you can do that. Let's talk about that now. But I think this just shows the weakness of the left, or what passes for a left in this country. That, Sanders is the new Obama, I call him. It's the same craze, the same marketing. They've marketed the word socialism. Yeah. So people can pretend that they're socialists when they're not. We just have to say it. And it's difficult because there are people who are, you know, friends and otherwise, politically, or who seem to be, who are going down this road. But we just have to say it. We have to point it out to them and start saying, well, what does a real revolution look like? And it would first start with not supporting the Democratic Party anymore. And people aren't ready. But when you say these things, then you see who is ready and who is not.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Sanders himself has said he's not a socialist. When he said, you know, he's, in terms of stating a fact pattern, he said, I am not in favor of worker control of the means of production. That's about as clear as it gets, isn't it?
Yes, it is. He's just a Democrat. He's an old school Democrat, and the Democratic Party has moved so far to the right that someone who says what all Democrats said 40 or 50 years ago can now be seen as very left-wing. When he's not, he's just a Democrat. I think he is, you know, better than Hillary Clinton. But we should not be fooled that there would be any major change should he become president. You know, there are limits, even assuming he's serious about everything he has said. He'd have to fight a very entrenched system, even to make small changes. So I think that's another thing we have to talk about. So no, he's not. He did it one time, I believe, when he was mayor in Burlington, Vermont. He was at the time a socialist, and he was an independent, and he was in cahoots with Democrats in Vermont. They never ran anybody against him, so they knew he was really a Democrat. They didn't raise money to give anybody else his Senate seat. So he's just a Democrat of the older school.
Yeah, and Leahy played that game too, actually. He ended up becoming an independent as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, the material basis of Sanders' primary campaign promises about, you know, free tuition and all of that, the money can only come from making serious cuts into the military expenditures. For example, the $1.1 trillion that President Obama seems hell-bent on spending on upgrading nuclear weapons, the mm-hmm. conduct of wars, the maintenance of, you know, 800-plus bases around the world. And the only one talking about cutting into that is Trump, and Sanders is the one that's going to need the money.
I know. It's Trump is funny because he has a little something for everyone.
Yeah.
Although I caution people, even though he doesn't use that word, but the foreign policy he has articulated is very much anti-imperialist. He is against regime change, against NATO. I mean, whoever ran for president said they were against NATO.
There's no reason
for NATO to... I mean, his argument for it is, you know, why are we paying for everything? Instead of, why do we need NATO at all? There's no Soviet Union anymore. So who is NATO opposing? The answer is still Russia, even though it's no longer a Soviet Union, and some former Soviet satellite states are now members of NATO. So he articulates some of the things that people on the left do, although it's not from the same point of view, so it's not a reason for me to be supportive of him, but I think it is startling. He's the only one whose foreign policy differs. All the other Democrats and Republicans who ran for president this year, they essentially have the same foreign policy. You know, Sanders can brag that he voted no, and unlike Hillary Clinton, for invading Iraq. But that's damning with faint praise, really. He still talks about containing Putin. So his foreign policy, he doesn't emphasize it very much, but what he has said is not very impressive to me.
You know what else with Trump? Yesterday, when he was in Long Island, it sounded like he was basically challenging the doctrine of endless war. He said something to the effect, imagine if we had some of our great generals, and he named Patton and MacArthur, and with all that goes with that, looking at the fight against ISIS. He said, they would shake their heads in bewilderment why, they could take on Japan and Nazi Germany and, and do that, and yet, for some reason, they can't take ISIS. Now, we know why that is.
Yeah, but, they don't want to.
Yeah, but nobody's saying that, even that much, that this is something that should be over, quick, done.
Yes, because the United States, for the past 40 years, has used these jihadist groups for their own ends.
Right.
And with disaster all over that region of the world. The U.S. doesn't want to fight ISIS in Syria because they want ISIS to do the job of taking out Assad. So that's why they've been pussyfooting around with ISIS. Putin, as I said before, should be in the paper because he is making good on kicking ISIS out of Syria.
That's right.
It's not done yet, but the Syrian army retaking the city of Palmyra was because of Russian air support. ISIS is still there, still very dangerous, but Putin has asked for a coalition. He said, let's work together to get rid of terrorism. But getting rid of terrorism is not the priority of the United States. Regime change is a priority of the United States. And making sure that secular governments in that part of the world are weak or are taken out altogether. So the U.S., on the one hand, says ISIS is evil or al-Qaeda is evil, but al-Qaeda in Syria, that branch known as al-Nusra, is one of those trying to get rid of Assad. So the United States talks out of both sides of its mouth on these issues, and that's why they haven't gotten rid of ISIS. The U.S. handed over Afghanistan to jihadists. The so-called the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan was an Afghan government asking the Soviet Union for help. And we made a mess of that. I shouldn't say we. The U.S. government made a mess of that, and that has continued. And then Afghanistan became a haven for the people who then turned against us. It's a story that goes on and on and on.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
And yes, it is.
Finally, looking again at Panama, what do you think are the takeaway lessons for using it to organize people moving forward, looking at revolution?
Well, I think you have to be careful. I think the issue should be, the takeaway ought to be that we need socialism all over the world in order to stop true socialism, because some of the people hiding their wealth are from China. China is politically supposed to be socialist, but it's actually capitalist. So that's the sort of discussion it ought to spark. And also the fact that the United States is now a tremendous tax haven. So those are the discussions we should have about wealth, about inequality in every part of the world. The other discussion should be about the media and how the corporate media operate and use this story in order to do what they usually do and be an ally of our governmental ruling class. And the first thing they point to is Putin, who has been declared the enemy of the West for no good reason. So I think we have to be careful. And the fact that this consortium of journalists, the ICIJ, which is, an NGO but funded by very large corporations, they're not the best people to be the keeper of these documents. They should all be released, and anybody and everyone should be able to look at them. But they're going to decide who sees what and when things are going to be released, and I'm not comfortable with that. So I'm all for journalists revealing what the rulers don't want to have revealed, but at the same time we have to ask hard questions about some of the individuals and organizations involved in this effort.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.